Welcome, Brother Eric John Phelps, 24/7 World Radio today, on this November 23rd, 2023, one day after the 60th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination, and today being Thanksgiving. So I thought I would give a little review of the continued cover-up of the Kennedy assassination that's lasted for 60 years. And it's the power to keep this covered up is greater than the power to carry it out. So to have this kind of cover-up, you must have a network in place, a powerful network in place, to maintain the cover-up. And hence, I will cover just a couple of topics of the Kennedy assassination, and then I will review a most recent edition of the cover-up by a book named, by a man named Paul Landis, who was a Secret Service agent at the time. The Secret Service agent wrote a book titled The Final Witness, A Kennedy Secret Service Agent Breaks His Silence After 60 Years, written by Paul Landis, and it was written in 2023, this year. So, it's a continual cover-up. As I will show you, this man, Paul Landis, is another liar and pimp for the Pope, just as his close friend is, Clint Hill, who wrote two works. One of them was Jackie and Me, and the other work, written shortly thereafter, was Mrs. Kennedy and Me, 2012, and the other one is 5 Days in November, 2013. So Clint Hill and Paul Landis are two lying, deceiving, oath-breaking, because they took an oath to uphold the Constitution, white devils, continually serving the papacy, and will be liars, apparently, until the day they die, until they're convicted of their sins by the Spirit of God, and truly repent, and having truly believed the gospel, to then tell the truth, which doesn't bode well for many of these agents, because they're guilty of shedding innocent blood, and hence deserve what they get. And by the way, one more thing. The only honest Secret Service agent that I could find in the many years of researching the Kennedy assassination was a black man named Abraham Bolden. He wrote a book about it, and because he dared to tell the truth, they concocted a charge against him and sent him up to federal prison for, I think it was 6 years. The only honest man in the Secret Service that told the truth was a black man appointed by Kennedy as the first black man to be a Secret Service agent, Abraham Bolden, and I believe he's a born-again, Bible-believing Christian man. So, I asked him years ago to be on my broadcast, and he kindly and respectfully refused. But he's the only one with any courage and any fidelity. So, today I would like to review a couple of points before we get to this book on the Kennedy assassination. I want to show you that there were men of power in 1963, in November of 1963, who knew the Jesuits had killed Kennedy. They knew the Jesuits had killed Kennedy. So, we shall begin. The man who knew that Kennedy had been assassinated by Jesuits and the Vatican hierarchy, his name was Brigadier General Herbert C. Holdridge, U.S. Army. I teach about him in my private citizenship class. And we see, concerning Mr. Holdridge, that he put out a flyer in 1952 titled Victory in 1952. And at the bottom of the first page, it says, the people of the United States deserve better than this. At the top page, we have a letter from Mr. Holdridge to the President of the United States, the Congress of the United States, and the Supreme Court of the United States, the three branches of government, written on July 4th, 1954. Subject, classification of the hierarchy of the Vatican and its agents in the United States as subversives. He writes, in fulfillment of my oath to defend the Constitution of the United States and within my duties as a responsible citizen, I present these charges against the secular political hierarchy of the Vatican in Rome and its representatives in the United States as subversives of our Constitution and as a great grave danger to our republic and our free institutions. I imply no criticism of the Roman Catholic religion as such, and stand willing to defend its freedom of expression as guaranteed by our Constitution. Paragraph 1. The Roman Catholic hierarchy and the Vatican stand before the world as a secular political state, ruled as a dictatorship by a secular ruler, an Italian politician, the Pope of Rome, and in 1954 this was Pacelli, Pius XII. It includes a leadership and an organizational population extending all over the world. Within the United States, it constitutes a, quote, state within a state, unquote. Its doctrine is diametrically opposed to American concepts of democracy and freedom. 2. This foreign denominated leadership, including membership of the United States, in the United States, namely cardinals, archbishops, bishops, and priests, is bound by an oath of personal loyalty to the head of this political dictatorship, the Pope in Rome, and must obey his absolute orders, even though such orders conflict with the Constitution of the United States. 3. This foreign denominated dictatorship has openly declared war on the Constitution of the United States and the safeguards of liberty established therein. In two major pronouncements, which constitute the quote-unquote party line of this secular political state, the quote syllabus of errors of Pope Pius IX, that was put out, by the way, in 1864, it's a list of 80 errors of modern civilization, one of them being freedom of conscience. And the encyclicals of Pope Leo XIII, he came after Pius IX, every freedom written into our Declaration of Independence and in the preamble and Bill of Rights of our Constitution is condemned point by point. Every member of the hierarchy, including those in the United States, is bound by his oath to the Vatican in condemnation of our Constitution, thus aligning himself as an enemy of our nation. 4. Through this hierarchy, the absolute orders of this foreign secular ruler are carried down to every Roman Catholic in the United States who must, knowingly or unknowingly, become party to the subversion of our Constitution. Our Roman Catholic brothers, indoctrinated from childhood. 2. The philosophies of spiritual and intellectual dictatorship find it an easy step to accept political dictatorship. 5. Every member of the hierarchy, including those in the United States, has further sworn undying enmity toward all quote-unquote heretics, every non-Catholic individual and government being included in the long-established pronouncements of the Vatican as being, quote-unquote, heretical. This applies to every non-Catholic public official in the United States, from the president on down. These so-called, quote-unquote, heretics must, in the traditional practice of the, quote-unquote, Spanish Inquisition, be rooted out by force and violence, which is the accepted technique of the Vatican. And by the way, they have many ways to do this. 6. The Vatican and its foreign denominated hierarchy in the United States has established hostile, militant, and even semi-military organizations within our borders. Its members likewise sworn to personal loyalty to the Pope in Rome or coming under the domination of their of this foreign political dictator, and are the pledged to undermine our institutions, the Knights of Columbus, the Society of Jesus, Jesuits, etc. It has infiltrated members of these subversive organizations and other collaborationists indoctrinated in its anti-American ideologies into public office, from lowest to highest, to undermine our institutions from within. It functions under its own canon law, and where inconsistent with public law, ignores our law. 7. The secular political hierarchy injects itself into both foreign and domestic affairs of the United States, as it has for centuries interfered with the external and internal affairs of other nations, most recently of Hitler in Germany, Mussolini in Italy, and Franco in Spain. It was an important influence behind the brutal feudal war in Korea. Evidence exists that it has been a powerful drive in the United States for war in Indochina. And absolutely, all you need to do is read Avril Manhattan's great work, Vietnam, Why Did We Go?, and it proves the point. It participates aggressively in the affairs of the countries of Latin America and is one of the forces of reaction behind the violence in Guatemala. Through Cardinal Spellman, who I proved was the one behind the assassination of JFK, through Cardinal Spellman, the voice of the Vatican in the United States, it has been a champion of Senator McCarthy, a member of the Knights of Columbus and trained in Jesuit schools, and thus drawing his inspiration from the Vatican rather than from our Constitution. In his program undermining our Constitution and of creating dissension and disunity from one end of the United States to the other. It has persisted, repeatedly, in invading the prerogatives of the United States by gaining, contrary to our Constitution, special privilege for its parochial schools, and in the face of repeated decisions of our Supreme Court, each instance becoming another overt act against our Constitution. By the way, JFK would not give one penny to Roman Catholic schools, but guess who did? George W. Bush, the alleged Protestant, the skull and bonesman loyal to the papacy. Remember, every skull and bonesman is loyal to the papacy. 8. The Vatican and its hierarchy in the United States stand in open enmity against our constitutional concepts of freedom of religion, deny religious tolerance where Roman Catholicism is accepted as the state religion, as in Spain, Colombia, and other parts of Latin America, and inflict reprisals against members of other faiths or those who profess no faith. It is the age-old ambition of the Vatican, openly declared and vigorously promoted, to turn the United States into a Roman Catholic nation. You see why they're bringing all the alien Roman Catholic Hispanics up into this country? Since Reagan, since 1984, really since 1965 under LBJ. Thus, its ambitions constitute an ever-present, dire threat against freedom of religion established under our Constitution. Whenever its subversive political acts are challenged, it takes refuge behind our constitutional shield of freedom of religion, which it itself denies. Remember, there is no freedom of religion under Catholicism, just like there's no freedom of religion under Islam. Of course, Islam is a little harlot of Roman Catholicism anyway. This secular political hierarchy of the Vatican possesses fabulous wealth in the United States. $10 billion since 1946 for schools alone, but permits no scrutiny of its financial records by public authority. It extracts huge sums from the American taxpayers annually. This wealth is used to maintain in luxury a foreign political ruler in violation of our Constitution and is expended locally to reach in its parochial schools and other institutions philosophies contrary to our Constitution. Under the hypocritical guise of serving humanitarian purposes, it pays not 1 cent of taxes on vast sums of this wealth and this income, adding this extra tax burden to the shoulders of non-Catholic taxpayers, a truly astounding situation. 10. The secular political ambitions of the Vatican constitute a threat to the peace of the United States and of the world. While pretending to preach world peace, it has engaged openly in a campaign to incite to World War III with atomic and hydrogen bombs, using the weapons, planes, and soldiers of the United States to further its machinations, well knowing that such a war must result in the destruction of the United States and the annihilation of world civilization. Thus, by its own acts, it establishes itself as a world criminal. By the way, there's no such thing as airborne nuclear war. I prove that in my book. However, he's most correct when he says the papacy is using the United States to conduct their crusades and to conduct war. Summary. The above charges are voluminously and conclusively documented. As presented, they represent in briefest outline the danger of our republic from the totalitarian power of the Vatican and its hierarchy. These have made no attempt at concealment of their purposes, but have operated openly and arrogantly in their campaign to subvert our Constitution. End of page 2. Page 3. We are deeply concerned, and rightly so, over the dangers of communist subversion of our institutions. But as the communists are ambitious of establishing a world government, this writer doesn't understand the Jesuits are the masters of communism, as I prove in my book, Vatican Assassins. A dictatorship under the control of the Kremlin, he doesn't understand that the Jesuits took Russia in 1917 with their Bolshevik Revolution, pursuant to the work Descent into Darkness by James J. Zatko. So is the hierarchy ambitious of establishing a world theocracy, a dictatorship under the control of the Vatican? The communists in the United States number some 25,000 who have been under constant attack and who have been driven underground. The Vatican and its adherents, however, number some 30 million and operate openly and blatantly to destroy our institutions, yet no action has been taken by responsible public officials to protect our Constitution and our institutions against this powerful dictatorship, which has already declared war against our freedoms. If the Kremlin were to wage its campaigns as openly, an atom bomb would be dropped on Moscow in short order. But we welcome to our bosoms this other powerful dictatorship, which is equally dangerous. Not only do high public officials not act to check this subversive force, but they actually fraternize publicly with its agents and lend them the prestige of their high office and give aid and comfort to a declared enemy. Many officials of the United States, in violation of Article 1, Section 9, Paragraph 8 of our Constitution, have accepted papal decorations and honors, unquestionably being influenced in their subsequent judgments and actions in favor of the Vatican. Recommendation number 1. That unless and until they publicly reject all teachings of the Vatican threatening our institutions, the hierarchy of the Vatican, including members in the United States, and including the Knights of Columbus, the Society of Jesus, Jesuits, Dominicans, Franciscans, Benedictines, and their confraternities of the Roman Catholic Church, to be placed forthwith on the subversive list of the Attorney General and subjected to the same restraints as are applicable to other subversives. 2. That a special committee of Congress be appointed to bring to light and to publicize the full record of overt and covert subversive activities of the Vatican and its agents, as is now done relative to communists. Remember, the Jesuits perfect communism in their reductions in Paraguay for 100 years, from 1609 to 1759, before the King of Portugal expelled them. 3. That representatives of the Vatican in the United States, including all who have taken an oath of loyalty to this foreign political ruler, be registered as agents of a foreign state, and that action be taken to cancel their citizenship in the United States as inconsistent with their oath to a foreign secular government. 4. That all officials elected or appointed to public office in the United States be required to reject openly and publicly all loyalties to any other secular political state, including the Kremlin and the Vatican, otherwise to be disqualified for public office. 5. That the right to tax exemption shall be revoked of any eleemosynary institution of a sectarian character, unless such institution qualifies for tax exemption by presenting its books for auditing, and such audit shall establish that no funds pertaining to said institution shall have been transferred to any foreign secular state or to the American agents thereof, or shall have been used for the purchase of newspapers, real property, or any commercial investment, to underwrite any campaign for parochial school tax exemption, or to nullify any provision of the Constitution of the United States. 6. That a program of education be initiated in the order of the Voice of America, on the order of the Voice of America, to inform the American people, and particularly our Roman Catholic brothers, who may not be aware of the dangers to our freedoms of the philosophies of the Vatican, of the facts of this threat to our Constitution. Very respectfully yours, Herbert C. Holdridge, Brigadier General, U.S. Army, retired. Copyright 1954, Herbert C. Holdridge. General Holdridge knew exactly what was going on. And he goes on and he gives documentation as to what, why he said what he said. He refers to American Freedom and Catholic Power by Paul Blanchard, which is a tremendous work. Communism, Democracy, and Catholic Power by Paul Blanchard. The People's Padre by Emmett McLaughlin. Emmett McLaughlin, I have referred to him in my book Vatican Assassins and a couple other of his works. The Roman Catholic Church and Democracy by Harold Refton. And he goes down and talks about certain people. And one of them is Jesuit Edmund Walsh. Father Edmund J. Walsh, S.J., Jesuit, Georgetown University School of Diplomacy, promoter of the Hit Russia Now, unquote, School of Military Strategy, in his book, Total Empire. Remember, the Jesuits ran Russia under communism, so this is an open but false policy of the Jesuits to attack Russia when a secret but true policy was to build the USSR, which it did. He mentions a few other men like S.D. Fellin, Western Watchman, 1912. I have this in my book also. We of the Roman Catholic Church are ready to go to the death for the church. Ready to go to the death for the church. Tell us that we think more of the church than we do of the United States? Of course we do. Tell us that in the conflict between the church and the civil government we take the side of the church? Of course we do. Why, if the government of the United States were at war with the church, we would say, quote, to hell with the government of the United States, unquote. And if the church and all the governments of the world were at war, we would say, quote, to hell with all the governments of the world, unquote. Why? The Pope is the ruler of the world. Unquote. From the oath of Roman Catholic bishops, quote, heretics, schismatics, and rebels to our said Lord the Pope, or his aforesaid successors, I will to my utmost persecute and oppose. Cardinal Gasparri, Bishop of the Concepcion, Chile, 1922. The opinion of those who wish to separate politics from religion is erroneous and pernicious. He then quotes the oath of the Knights of Columbus, and he stays here. Congressional Record of February 15th, 1913. I also have that in my book. I, whoever, declare and swear that His Holiness the Pope hath power to depose kings, like JFK, princes, states, commonwealths, and governments, and that they may be safely destroyed. I do now denounce and disown any allegiance as do any heretical king, prince, or state, named Protestant or liberal, or obedience to any of their laws, magistrates, or officers. I do further promise and declare that I will, when opportunity presents, make and wage a relentless war, secretly and openly, against all heretics, Protestants, and Masons. Here now, Mr. Holdridge believes the Scottish Rite Masonic Lodge is against the papacy, which maybe low-level Masons are, but at the top, they are completely controlled by the Jesuits, as the Jesuits have written all their rites. As I am directed to do, to extirpate them, that means kill them off, from the face of the whole earth, that I will, in voting, always vote for a Knight of Columbus in preference to a Protestant, especially a Mason, and I will leave my party to do so. And by the way, the Jesuits took over this country on March 9, 1933 with a Protestant Freemason, an Episcopalian named Franklin D. Roosevelt, on March 9, 1933. So, those are some of the... Here's another quote. General Marquis de Lafayette. I also have it in my book. In a letter to Professor Samuel B. Morse, quote, it is my opinion that if the liberties of this country are destroyed, it will be by the subtlety of the Roman Catholic Jesuits. They are the most crafty, dangerous enemies of civil and religious liberty. And, of course, there's the great Garibaldi, the great patriot in Italy, when they drove out Pius IX from Italy. Quote, the papacy is the most horrible plague that my country, Italy, is afflicted with. 18 centuries of falsehood and persecution have rendered that plague intolerable. Unquote. Now this is what he quotes. It's the great Herbert Holdridge, a United States general. There, Holdridge also quotes an article out of Saturday Evening Post, sends it to Dwight Eisenhower, President of the United States, on the Pope's commandos. And when I was working in an egg packing factory many, many years ago, a lady there gave me that issue of Life magazine. We have here now from General Holdridge an open letter, and it's to the Honorable Carl Wagoner, Attorney General, State of Texas, of November 27, 1963. Title of the first paragraph, title of the article, Complicity of Lyndon B. Johnson in the Murders of John F. Kennedy and Lee Howard Oswald. It should be Harvey Oswald. He states, as a postscript to my letter of November 26 concerning investigation of these two murders, I suggest a careful scrutiny of the complicity of Mr. Lyndon Johnson. Now, Lyndon Johnson, a Scottish Rite Freemason and trained by Jesuits for 1 year at Georgetown University. Lyndon Johnson, now acting as president. In these crimes within the area of my conclusion that these murders were plotted by Vatican Jesuit forces. Oh, I should say. This is a continued sentence. I'll do it again. As a postscript to my letter of November 26 concerning investigation of these two murders, I suggest a careful scrutiny of the complicity of Mr. Lyndon Johnson, now acting as president, in these crimes within the area of my conclusion that these murders were plotted by Vatican Jesuit forces. I offer the following additional factors bearing on the situation. And now he's going to give evidence of this, historical evidence. He says, paragraph 1. So here's a man, by the way, who knew the Jesuits had killed Kennedy 5 days after the murder. He publishes it. Where are all the other men that are going to unite with him and agree and decide to do something about it? There aren't any. That shows you the apostasy of the true church of Jesus Christ in this country, be it Protestant or Baptist or otherwise. And so that there were no real leaders to stand up and blame the Vatican for the murder of our first Roman Catholic president who dared disagree with the Pope and step outside of his purpose and call for several things that the papacy and the Jesuits said Kennedy has got to go. Paragraph 1. Lyndon B. Johnson was a co-conspirator with Kennedy and the forces of the Vatican in the fraudulent election of 1960 and is equally guilty with Kennedy for every crime committed. He accepted without protest the Pope's seditious orders that all Roman Catholics vote for Kennedy, engaged in every political fraud which brought Kennedy to power, was responsible for the mammoth frauds perpetrated in Texas by his own political machine, made the quote-unquote pilgrimage to Canossa, unquote, to yield allegiance to the Pope, invalidating his oath to the Constitution, and after Kennedy's inauguration became a willing accessory to every executive crime. Kennedy's inauguration being fraudulent, and by adhering to enemies of the United States, treason, Johnson's inauguration was identical, and he is no more a legal president than would have been the lowliest wino, quote-unquote, snatched from Skid Row and hastily sworn in as president. Number 2. Johnson's purpose to continue the seditious policies of Kennedy was made plain in his address to Congress. His adherence to the Kennedy policies in Vietnam, involving the murder of Buddhist monks, and the subsequent murders of Diem and Nhu, all under the inspiration of the CIA, adherence to support of the Wall Street, quote, shark, unquote, which has bankrupted the United States in its raids against the, quote, unquote, sardines of Latin America, under the guise of an already aborted alliance for progress, reliance on H-bomb diplomacy as the ultimate international instrument, pledge of loyalty to the United Nations, controlled by nations enemies of our Constitution, but not one word spoken of loyalty to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights in the Kennedy precedent in his inaugural, talking out both sides of his mouth, a very gem of Jesuitical double talk, undoubtedly written by a Jesuit. Now remember, Holdridge doesn't know why Kennedy's killed. He doesn't know that he's resisted Francis Cardinal Spellman. He doesn't know that Kennedy purposed to get America out of Vietnam by 1965. And all of this information you can find in the book JFK by L. Fletcher Prouty, Colonel Prouty. He doesn't know this. They removed Kennedy and put LBJ in, who followed completely the policies of the Vatican. And I will add that LBJ's personal friend was Winibald Snyder, a German Roman Catholic priest who went everywhere with Johnson when he went overseas. Continuing, paragraph 3. Johnson's crocodile tears over the murder of Kennedy, but not one word of responsible executive purpose to uncover every hidden criminal who helped plot the assassinations, preferring, like the police of Dallas, to announce by silence that the record of Oswald is now closed, and I repeat, like hell it is, unquote. 4. As a longtime Texas politician, acquainted with every political outlaw, and having access to all facts or rumors prior to assassinations, and more surely subsequent thereto, remaining mute, though the world shudders at the open knowledge of murder of Oswald to cover for the real criminals, indicating clearly that Johnson possesses guilty knowledge, or is himself a participant in the crime. Had he nothing to conceal, he would himself have taken the initiative for full investigation. And remember, the book that further proves Johnson was totally involved in the Kennedy assassination was Texas in the Morning by LBJ's Roman Catholic concubine, Madeline Duncan Brown. Going on. 5. In any murder, a compelling question is, quote, who had the most to gain, unquote. Yeah. Who benefits? The obvious answer is Lyndon B. Johnson for all his tearful regrets. 6. Participation in the 4 days of vulgar Vatican ballyhoo, turning a fraud and criminal into a saint, squeezing every ounce of political and clerical advantage out of the cadaver of the dead Kennedy, as had been done during life, including the exploitation of his entire family. By the way, after Kennedy's assassination, Jackie was appointed a Jesuit confessor at Georgetown. His name was Richard McSorley. You check him out. And Jackie wouldn't say one word about anything unless it went past the okay or censorship of Richard McSorley. He's just as bad as John LaFarge, the master of the Pope's pro-black, anti-white civil rights movement. Continuing. 7. Undoubtedly prepared to accept Robert Kennedy as vice presidential candidate for the 1964 elections, as already hinted, to permit the Pope to play both ends against the middle. A session of John McCormick, if Johnson dies, as was predicted along with Kennedy. By the way, John McCormick was the most notable Roman Catholic, and I have a picture of him with his wife, and Spellman, and Eisenhower at the Vatican with Pope John the 23rd. Goes on. McCormick, if Johnson dies, as was predicted along with Kennedy, or Robert Kennedy, if Johnson lives, to keep a FOBT, fopped in the crack of the door, foot in the crack of the door, to perpetuate the fallen Kennedy dynasty. 8. Were the communists involved in these murders, Johnson and the Vatican would have exploited their full propaganda against the USSR. Well, Angleton tried to blame Castro in Cuba for it as a cover-up move, you know. By the way, John Kennedy Jr. went down to talk to Fidel Castro and asked him if he was involved in his father's assassination. Castro denied it. Of course, Castro was trained by Jesuits anyway. He was a Jesuit. And a CIA operative. That's why the CIA really never killed him, again, with all these supposed attempts to kill Castro, with Marita, that little Italian Roman Catholic whore in the CIA, Marita Lorenz. She wrote a book called Marita. Get it and read it. She was a girlfriend of Castro with a supposed plot to kill Fidel Castro, which is nonsense. Go on. 8. Were the communists involved in these murders, Johnson and the Vatican would have exploited their full propaganda against the USSR. It should be expended. The fact that they have remained mute indicates that they realize their own involvement, know where the bodies are buried, and rely upon the seditious, falsifying mobster press controlled by the Vatican and Wall Street to cover their crimes. Controlled by the Vatican and Wall Street by way of the Council on Foreign Relations in New York, overseen by the Archbishop of New York. That's what he should have said in adding to that. Lastly, in view of the above, I demand that Johnson be questioned under oath and his actions be given the same thorough investigation demanded by other suspects. The Constitution cannot be defended otherwise. By authority of the Constitution of the United States, Herbert C. Holdridge, Brigadier General, U.S. Army Retired Administrator. Here is a man that knew exactly what happened on November 22nd, 1963. He made it public. He notified the president. He notified the Congress. He notified the Supreme Court. He notified the Attorney General of Texas, Mr. Wagoner. Of course, Conley was the governor at the time involved in the assassination. Conley was present at the meeting at Clint Murchison's house, according to a particular work I have called Elite Serial Killers, Elite Serial Killers of Lincoln, JFK, RFK, MLK, by Robert Galen Ross, a book you need to get. So he knew this. But nobody talks about it. Nobody will actually purposely blame the papacy and the man that was the most powerful prince of the church at the time in 1963, whose name was Francis Cardinal Spellman, the Archbishop of New York City and Cardinal since 1949, the very year he put Mao Zedong in power using the American Navy in 1949. So here is Francis Cardinal Spellman, the real mastermind behind the Kennedy assassination. Now, this Roman hierarchy in the United States is the power in continuing the cover-up of the Kennedy assassination. This Roman hierarchy that is overseen by the Jesuit order, the Society of Jesus, through their military fortresses called universities, they control all the secret societies from Skull and Bones to Scottish Rite Freemasons to the Knights of Columbus to the Nation of Islam to the Ku Klux Klan. They control all the secret societies. And hence, when they have this power exercised through the Council on Foreign Relations, pardon me, the Trilateral Commission and other semi-secret societies, they control the press. And they pay their pimps and whores of the press and of academia to perpetuate the lie that there was one shooter and three shots on November 22nd, 1963. One of these liars is a man named Paul Landis, who wrote a book in 2023, just recently. The Final Witness is its title. A Kennedy Secret Service agent breaks his silence after 60 years. Well, he starts out his book and he gives his life history, and you know, we're not interested in any of that. We want to read what happens, okay, Mr. Landis? We don't care about your life history. Tell us what happened. Tell us what you know. So I get through the first half of the book, and he's talking about his various connections. He becomes a member of the Secret Service, and he mentions the Secret Service chief, James Rowley. Well, James Rowley, according to the book Hoover's FBI, met with Carthy DeLoach, who was the first in command, with a Jesuit at Georgetown University named Daniel Power after the assassination. And so the Jesuits were perfecting the coordination between the FBI and the Secret Service at this meeting. Daniel Power was the Jesuit of power, overseeing the head of the Secret Service, James Rowley. And James Rowley had a brother named Francis, who was also a Jesuit priest. Just like Alexander Haig was involved in the Kennedy assassination, he had a brother that was a Jesuit priest named Francis Haig, who used to teach at Loyola out of Baltimore. All these important details fingering the papacy as the one behind the Kennedy assassination and cover-up are deliberately avoided and never spoken of by anybody in the Pope's press, and for that part, even in the alternative press. Jesuit Coger Alex Jones will never tell you about this, or Steve Bannon, or any of these others. They'll never talk about the power of the papacy and the Kennedy assassination, because that would lead to its power today. And you definitely can't talk about the power of the papacy today without being deemed a conspiracy theorist, which little phrase was concocted by the Central Intelligence Agency in 1947. And so if you're a conspiracy theorist, why, you're not to be listened to. And even Oliver Stone now said in one of his most in the revisiting the JFK assassination, you can watch it on Netflix, he says it's not a conspiracy theory, it's a conspiracy facts. Well, good for Oliver Stone, but he will never, Oliver Stone will never talk about Francis Cardinal Spellman or the Jesuits or the Roman papacy in the Kennedy assassination and 60-year cover-up. Because they know, he knows, who really was behind it. So he talks about, Mr. Landis talks about James Rowley. Make sure you get the book, Hoover's FBI. There's a meeting right in there with Daniel Power, James Rowley, and Karthadiki Deloach. Deloach is not a Malta. And he goes on, and Jackie is related to the Radziwill. Her sister married a Polish prince. And Radziwill was not a Malta. But it's not mentioned by Mr. Landis here. It goes on, and they're traveling around with the author's pictures in there. And they go visit Aristotle Onassis, and Aristotle Onassis was a sex pervert. He got the foreskins of whales, and he covered the bar stools in his yacht with the foreskins of whales and used to joke with the women. You like that great big penis between your legs? That's the perversion of Aristotle Onassis that Jackie was married off to keep her quiet and get her out of the country. These men are evil, wicked sinners. Going on, page. They were boozing the night before. Talks about that. And, on page 152, Mr. Landis, Liar Landis, states, Dallas Police Chief Jesse Curry was driving the lead car, accompanied by Advance Agent Wynn Lawson, Dallas Sheriff Bill Decker, and Special Agent in Charge Forrest Sorrells from the Dallas Field Office. By the way, I have a supporter who's related to Forrest Sorrells and tells me how evil he was, untrustworthy. Forrest Sorrells, and we read from the Dallas Field Office. The President's limo came next, flanked by four Dallas police motorcycle escorts, two on each side. Special Agent Greer, Bill Greer, was driving. And Assistant Special Agent in Charge Kellerman sat on the right front passenger seat. Greer and Kellerman organized the shooting from within the vehicle. William Greer shot Kennedy on the right side of his head, which caused the flap to come out. And he had an exploding round, which blew back the back of his head and landed on the trunk. And this is all proven by the great and good author of Behold a Pale Horse. Behold a Pale Horse by, you know the author's name. But bless me now. Who was, by the way, assassinated. So, it was all proven, and this particular author sent, I'll find his name, just hold it. The author of Behold the Pale Horse was William Cooper, who gave a copy of the Zapruder film to the Japanese. The Japanese analyzed it and said, absolutely, the shooter shot Kennedy, which I have also concluded in my own analysis, and he was shot simultaneously by the storm drain shooter, which is also proven by some other officers, which caused a big puff of red smoke when the shot took place. The exploding round of the shooter shot from his stainless steel .45, and also Kennedy is shot in the back by Special Agent Hickey with his M16 shot in the back. All of this was a wonderful turkey shoot for the Secret Service, and Kellerman was turned to put his back to the door and watched Greer do the shooting when he shot Kennedy in the head. It's very simple, very clear, very simple. And by the way, Abraham Zapruder was there as a CIA operative. He was a Masonic Jew, making sure he would not photograph or take the picture of with his millimeter camera there, movie camera, he kept it high so that the storm drain shooter would not be seen when he was shooting Kennedy out of the storm drain. All a wonderful op. And all the Zapruder films now that are out there have two seconds cut out when the limousine stopped for 2 seconds in the middle of the road to give the shooters a nice stable target. None of that's talked about. So, here's Mr. Landis. Mr. Landis is on the backup limousine of the Kennedy limousine. He's there. He's watching everything. He's watching his buddy Clint Hill jump off his limousine and go jump on the back of the limousine and push Backy back into the limousine. Remember, Paul Landis and Clint Hill are bosom buddies and friends with their lying works and continual cover-up in the assassination. One shooter, three shots. He goes on page, Mr. Landis goes on page, let me see. The shootings. He says, on page 160, a third shot rang out, and the assassin's bullet found its mark. Okay, and reading again from Landis's work, we read Kennedy's memo. I was looking, page 160, I was looking forward and had a clear view of the president's memo in front of us. He talks about, it was probably no more than 50 feet from my position on the right rear running board of halfback. Well, halfback was the limousine behind the Kennedy limousine, and it was higher. So when Special Agent Hickey shot at Kennedy in the back, he was shooting down so that the round, it was a low-level round. It didn't go through Kennedy's body, just enough for a little distraction, because they found that he was shot in the back at the autopsy at Bethesda. Going on, he says, all thoughts of reaching safely vanished in the next moment when Lady Luck skipped the scene. A third shot rang out, and the assassin's bullet found its mark. I saw a flash of white as the right side of President Kennedy's head exploded in a pink spray of blood, flesh, and brain matter. Yeah. So, this is the third shot. It goes on. Page 161. I saw the third shot hit President Kennedy in the head, and I saw the results of the wound. So he's holding to the lie of three shots, one assassin. Okay, it goes on page 166. Now, this is where this book is very intriguing. He tells us that he finds the pristine bullet and that he puts it on the president's gurney. That it wasn't Jack Ruby who did it, according to the movie JFK by Oliver Stone. Paul Landis is the Secret Service agent who finds the bullet in the limousine and puts it in his pocket and then brings it inside Parkland Hospital and puts it on the gurney of Kennedy, where it's found. And this will become the pristine bullet theory. But it's interesting that Landis never mentions anything about the single bullet theory in his book. Can't do that, because that ties him to Arlen Specter, the liar, who became senator for Pennsylvania, I think, 5 terms for his obedience. But he goes on, and he says, when Mrs. Kennedy finally stood up, I looked again at the seat and saw a bullet on top of the tufted black leather cushioning behind where she had been sitting. It was resting in a seam where the tufted leather padding ended against the car's metal body. It wasn't a bullet fragment like the other two pieces. It was a completely intact bullet. By the way, if there's a bullet fragment of other two pieces, then there's more than three shots. Mr. Landis. He says, no wonder I hadn't seen it sooner. It had been hidden behind Mrs. Kennedy all the time she was seated. No wonder I hadn't seen it sooner. He's acting like an imbecile. I picked it up and quickly examined it. It was approximately 2 inches long and in almost perfect condition. It was not distorted in any way and had rifle striations running lengthwise along the sides. Man, oh man, oh man, I thought, what should I do? This is all in italics. All right. So he finds this intact bullet. And my immediate concern was the bullet, page 167. He said, people were starting to mill around and beginning, page 168, people were starting to mill around and beginning to merge toward the car. I had to do something. I had to do it fast. I was afraid this nearly perfect intact bullet would disappear. I did not want that to happen. No, Clint was occupied. Clint Hill, that other traitor. Clint was occupied helping Mrs. Kennedy out of the limo. She was already halfway out of the car, and I had to stay with Clint and her. Damn it, Paul, decision time. You know, what theatrics. By the way, I'm sure this book is completely reviewed by the CIA. And he would never allow, it would never be allowed to publish without the CIA going through it all with a fine-tooth comb. Going on. I slipped it into my right coat pocket. All of this had taken place in a fraction of seconds. I would give the bullet to Assistant Secret Service Agent Charles Kellerman, I thought, to explain my actions later when there was time. So he doesn't give it to Kellerman. Page 169. Stepping out of the limo with purse and hat in hand, the bullet and lighter secure in my coat pocket, in my suit pocket, I followed Mrs. Kennedy. I moved to her left side, and everyone headed toward the emergency room entrance. So he's got the bullet in his pocket. Goes on, 171. Where the hell was Clint anyway? Clint Hill. He goes on. Page 172. Everything was happening so rapidly that there was hardly time to think. Only seconds had passed, and I was fumbling with the bullet in my pocket while I was concentrating on the president's shoes. For whatever reason, my thoughts shifted. This is where the bullet belongs, with the president's body. This bullet is important evidence. A doctor will find it, and it might be helpful during the autopsy. Okay, kindergartners. You see how infantile he sounds? Sorry, it says, I removed the bullet from my pocket. People were starting to leave the room. I had to make another split-second decision. Just do it, Paul! Just do it! If you are going to do anything, you've got to do it now, before the opportunity slips away. I removed the bullet from my pocket, and reaching out over the examination table, I carefully placed it on the white cotton blanket next to the president's left shoe. When I let go, the bullet started rolling toward the edge of the table. Holy shit, I thought, as my heart jumped and started racing. I quickly reached back and stopped it from rolling just before it fell into a little trough that ran around the edge of the table. If it had fallen into that trough, or worse yet, into the floor, I knew that I would not have had the time or ability to retrieve it. When the president's body had been placed on the examination table, it had made a small wrinkle in the cotton blanket by the president's feet. Because of this, I was able to reposition the bullet to prevent it from rolling again. With all the confusion going on in the room, no one had even noticed what I had done. Woo, that was close, I thought. The last thing I wanted was for that bullet to get lost. I felt relief. I was certain at the time that I had made the correct decision. I had saved an important piece of evidence, and I had placed it where it belonged, with the president's body. It would be found and proved to be helpful. Yeah, it's called the magic bullet theory, Paul, which you're not going to mention in your book, Paul. I felt like a heavy burden had been lifted from my shoulders. Yeah, because I'm a co-conspirator in the Kennedy assassination and cover-up. That's right. Isn't that right, Paul? It talks about Vice President Johnson was whisked by, bent over, and shielded by several detail agents. Well, they got to put their replacement in for the Pope. Talks about LBJ is sworn in on Air Force One by a Roman Catholic woman. He doesn't say she's Roman Catholic, but he gives her name there. And, of course, LBJ is sworn in, not on a Bible, but on a Roman Catholic Missal. That nice? And Landis is in the back picture, this famous picture of LBJ raising his hand with Jackie standing next to him, knowing that he's her killer. He's the killer of her husband. She has to stand there next to that piece of trash. All right, going on. Yeah, Sarah T. Hughes, a Roman Catholic lady, swears in Johnson on the Roman Catholic Missal. By the way, Jack Valenti is there too. And Jack Valenti is a Knight of Malta. He will be an advisor to LBJ throughout his presidency. Jack Valenti. Another Italian Roman Catholic Knight of Malta serving the Pope of Rome. We go on page 194. And then we'll end this. He says here, a final note, Air Force 26,000, that's the airplane, Air Force One, can now be found in the National Museum of the U.S. Air Force in Dayton, Ohio. I visited there in October 2017. Christina Douglas, the manuscript curator of the museum, gave me a personal tour of this historic plane. I was nervous and envisioned everything being the same as I remembered it from the time that I was on board. I was surprised when I first looked where I had been sitting. Now get this. I was surprised when I first looked where I had been sitting. The seats were gone. And in fact, the entire interior of the plane had been redesigned and was completely different. They're going to do the same thing with the limousine when they're going to replace all the primary strikes overseen by Lee Iacocca, because he's the one that's going to be bringing the limousine back to Cranston and Kurtz there in, I believe it's Cleveland, Ohio. They got to get rid of all the evidence. So we'll just replace all the seats in Air Force One. All right, going on. I should have known. After all, it had been nearly 54 years. In 1972, the plane was replaced as the regular Air Force One by another Boeing 707, but it continued to be used as a backup and had carried 8 presidents in all before it was fully retired in 1998. All the seats on the side where I had been sitting had been removed and replaced with little cubicle areas, each one having a small desk and telephone. The bulkhead where I had watched Vice President Johnson take the presidential oath of office had also been relocated. Christina pointed out where the changes had been made, which helped me reconstruct what I remembered. Christina also told me a curious story. Now get this. The museum owns the logbook of all flights that Air Force One made with President Kennedy on board. On Monday, November 25th, 1963, this is 3 days after the assassination, as Swindle, now Swindle is the pilot, flew over the graveside, there was no president on board. No entry was made in the logbook, and there was no tangible record of that flight ever taking place. So the flight flying Kennedy back to Washington was not in the logbook, or any evidence that it ever took place. You think there's a conspiracy here, Mr. Landis? Huh? Maybe? He goes on page 197. He says, on Friday, December 6th, Mrs. Kennedy and the children finally moved out of the White House and took up a temporary residence at the home of Averill and Marie Harriman at 3038 North Street Northwest in Georgetown. The Harrimans were friends of the Kennedys, and Averill Harriman has served as ambassador-at-large in the Kennedy assassination. Averill Harriman is one of the most evil, wicked sinners that will ever disgrace this country. Averill Harriman was a Knight of Malta. Averill Harriman was a member of Skull and Bones. Averill Harriman is the one who signed Lend-Lease and gave to Joseph Stalin $11.2 billion in July of 1941, almost 6 months before the U.S. entered the war against Germany. Averill Harriman will go to Russia and will act as Stalin's advisor. Averill Harriman is of the railroad tycoon family, is one of the most evil, wicked sinners, and he is involved in the Kennedy assassination. And unfortunately, I did not mention him in my book, Vatican Assassins. I should have put his picture up there as another Knight of Malta involved in the assassination of JFK, because there were at least 20 of them. Averill Harriman. Next. all sorts of rumors start happening of the conspiracy theory. Of course, you got Mark Lane coming out, and he has his book Plausible Deniability, which is an excellent work. And William F. Buckley hated Mark Lane the Jew because the Mark Lane the Jew told the truth, and there was a suit between Mark Lane and William F. Buckley later on. Talks about Clint and I, my boyfriend Clint Hill. I considered him my best friend, page 205. And so what he does is he resigns from the Secret Service. And here's his conclusion. I'll end this because I've had enough. I'm sure you have too. Page 208. In 1979, should be 76. 1979, I received a telephone call from someone representing the House Select Committee on Assassinations, led by Congressman Lewis Stokes, to reinvestigate the findings in the Warren Commission report. Lewis Stokes was a brilliant Philadelphia lawyer, and he was going to get to the end of it. But you know what? They got rid of him and put Blakey, the head, the Roman Catholic from Notre Dame, who suppressed everything. And it says, during the entire 15 years prior to that call, I hadn't looked at my written report. Though I was never formally called to testify, my written report still exists. Now, you see, Paul Landis was never called to testify at the Warren Commission. And he's riding on the limousine right behind the presidential limousine. Why wasn't he ever called? Because he's in on it. He's in on the game. That's why. And he goes down the bottom of the paragraph and says, one shooter, three shots, period. The report was factual, but not overly descriptive. Though my page was 209. Through my written report discussed the shooting, I never mentioned the bullet I had found on the seat of the presidential limo. It didn't seem an important detail to mention at the time. I had no way of knowing that Exhibit 399, also referred to as the third bullet. How about the single bullet? How about the single bullet theory, Paul? He's just going to call it the third bullet, but would become a source of controversy. Once I'd left the bullet on the president's gurney, I forgot about it. I'd done my job. I had saved and prevented an important piece of evidence from becoming lost, and I assumed at the time it would be found where I placed it. I never thought about that bullet again until the evening of March 14, 2014, when I picked up 6 seconds in Dallas. So, in conclusion, this evil man was part of the Kennedy assassination. Last page, 212. Though I had not read the Warren Commission report, which we know all was bogus and fake, I knew that there had been a lot of criticisms, and 6 seconds in Dallas, author Josiah Thompson was doing his own quote-unquote micro study of the evidence. I was reading along, thinking that his account was fairly accurate to what I saw and remembered. When I came to page 146, Thompson was describing a quote-unquote super bullet that, according to the commission, was found in Governor Connally's stretcher and had caused his wounds. This is where my heart skipped a beat, and I first realized that the Warren Commission's report was wrong. The, quote, super bullet, unquote, hadn't been on Governor Connally's stretcher in trauma room number 2. I recognized it as the bullet I had found in the limo and placed next to President Kennedy's feet in trauma room 1. So, that's his story. So this man, Paul Landis, Secret Service agent, on November 22nd, 1963, is a participant in the continual cover-up of the Kennedy assassination, along with his dear friend, Clint Hill. Also there on November 22nd, 1963. Two cover-up artists, and they will remain cover-up liars till the day they die, until they repent, believe the gospel, are saved, and then I have a burden to tell the truth, no matter what happens to them. So this is my broadcast for today concerning the Kennedy assassination of 60 years ago. It continues to be covered up by the agents of the Roman hierarchy in the United States as they run their emergency war powers military government out of Washington and financed by New York for reducing all nations to the temporal power of the Pope, as they're presently behind the war in Gaza, controlling both sides, the Israeli government and Hamas and Hezbollah Oh, no, those are the factions, totally subordinate to the Pope of Rome by their leaders. And had the Kennedy assassination been properly solved, this present war in Gaza would not be. So, Brother Eric John Phillips, thank you for tuning in today. I have a book, Vatican Assassins, Wounded in the House of My Friends. Please go to my website, vaticanassassins.org, and purchase a copy of my ebook. I have other things there for your interest. I have my recordings in the past 10 years or so, 10 years that you can get. But lastly, I want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving, and that the truth is still out there. And as long as I'm able to tell the truth, I will tell the truth, at least as best as I know it and see it and have researched it. Appreciate your prayers, and use your prayers 2 minutes a day, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. And until we meet again, this is November 23rd, 2023. May the Lord bless you to do his will according to his word, the AV 1611 Reformation English Bible.